From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, investigative reporter Cheryl Jones joins us with an amazing story of the other side, followed by Open Lines with Cheryl. And here's what's happening. The Islamic State, it's called ISIS, struck the crowded gates of the Kabul airport in Afghanistan in a couple suicide bomb attacks, killing scores of civilians, at least 13 U.S. troops dead, disrupting the airlift of tens of thousands of Afghans desperate to flee. Kabul health officials were quoted as saying 60 civilians were killed, and video shot by Afghan journalists showed dozens of bodies all over a canal at the edge of the airport. At least two blasts rocked the area. ISIS said one of its suicide bombers targeted translators and collaborators with the American Army. The American casualties, which increased to 13 from 12 later on Thursday, according to the U.S. officials, were believed to be the most U.S. troops killed in Afghanistan in a single incident since 30 personnel died when a helicopter was shot down back in August of 2011. The attack was carried out as the U.S. forces raced to complete their withdrawal from Afghanistan, after President Joe Biden said the United States had long ago achieved its original rationale for invading the country in 2001 to root out al-Qaeda militants and prevent a repeat of the 9/11 attacks on the United States. The president vowed to go after the perpetrators because of Thursday's bombing and said he had ordered the Pentagon to plan how to strike ISIS-K, the Islamic State affiliate that apparently claimed responsibility. We will next week have a full show on Afghanistan, and we'll see what happens in this situation. Our condolences to the family members of the 13 dead soldiers and the many wounded as well. A major study conducted by Israeli researchers into natural immunity has found that immunity acquired via infection from COVID-19 is superior, better, to immunity from the Pfizer vaccine. Researchers at the Maccabi Healthcare and Tel Aviv University compared the outcomes of more than 76,000 Israelis in three groups: the doubly vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine, the previously infected but unvaccinated, and the previously infected with only a single vaccine dose. They found that the fully vaccinated but uninfected people were significantly more likely to have a breakthrough COVID infection than people who had previously been infected and recovered from that disease. Isn't that amazing? The U.S. Food and Drug Administration says it's received multiple reports of patients erroneously attempting to treat COVID-19 with an ivermectin formulation used to deworm livestock. Several people have been hospitalized after taking this version of ivermectin, according to the regulator, which sent out a tweet and published a corresponding post to highlight the situation. I told a story a couple days ago. I'll tell it again. My daughter-in-law's sister, all right, she's married to my son, her sister came down with COVID, and there was really nothing that was working on her. The doctor prescribed ivermectin as a prescription, and it went away in 2 days. Isn't that remarkable? And COVID-19 vaccines for children under 12, when are they going to come? 8 months after the adult Americans began receiving COVID-19 vaccines, children under 12 are still not eligible for the shots. And that's left a lot of patients worried that their children might get sick. Twofold questions here for Christian Weil from myheartbook.com. First of all, his reaction to the ivermectin, and then the children and the vaccines. Hello, Christian.
Hello, George, and hello, audience. I have come to the point of not questioning anything. Anything, everything is possible. And what you just shared with us about the ivermectin, yeah, it's, you know, it was developed for deworming the livestock.
That's right.
But if it helped your family member, who are we to question it? Every day there's some new information. You know, some of this, George, tonight might sound a little repetitious, but when it comes to looking after our children, I'm sure you would agree it all bears repeating. These kids are our most valuable assets.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and we are all happy to see our children heading back to school. These kids will be depending on parents, grandparents, and the rest of us to make sure every protection is in place for their safety. Dr. Mona Amin is a highly respected board-certified physician who just told Yahoo News that this new Delta surge, and that's what she called it, of 180,000 children have tested positive in just this last week.
Jeez.
And we were always told that this was a disease that would target the adult population and not the children. You and I shared some of that information from time to time. This is a highly aggressive, 60% more easily transmittable and dangerous to our very young people. How things change, George, every day. So here is possibly a common sense question. As young people are preparing to go back in the classroom, how can we be sure that the protective measures the rest of us have been given of maintaining 6 feet of social distancing throughout the day, plus the fact that studies show that this new variant lives for literally hours in an enclosed airspace, like a classroom. Now, how do we protect our children when they're going to be shoulder to shoulder through the course of the day and breathing that air that can easily transmit the virus compared to the Alpha strain that we knew all about over the past year and a half? Incidentally, worth noting, George, many of these cases originating from both vaccinated and unvaccinated households. Both
right,
are spreading the disease.
And what's new at myheartbook.com, Christian?
If people want to see masks that were worn in 1918, go on to my website and you will see actual pictures of the entire age groups, including the two-year-old children in 1918, the influenza pandemic, all wearing the exact masks they want us to wear today.
Christian's website, myheartbook.com. A couple weeks ago on Open Lines, we got a call from an individual who said, where have all the insects and bugs gone? And that was an interesting question. Well, now they're saying light pollution from street lamps are linked to insect loss. That's right. Scientists say that light pollution may be contributing to the worrying declines in insects seen in recent decades. In a U.S. study, artificial street lights were found to be disruptive of the behavior of nocturnal moths, reducing caterpillar numbers by half, and it could be affecting other insects as well. Scientists say that the immediate potential of an eruption of Hawaii's Kilauea volcano has declined, slowed down, after earthquakes and ground swelling subsided in the 24 hours leading up to Thursday morning. That's a good sign, at least. We don't need another volcano. What's going on in the skies? Let's check in with the author of Roswell in the 21st Century, Kevin Randall. Kevin, what do you have for us this week?
Hey, good evening, George.
Hi there.
It's not been a good day.
No, it hasn't.
I've been looking at cases which there is something more than just witness testimony, such as a case from May 27th of this year from Whitehall, Illinois. The witness said that he'd wakened in the night, and I guess you can guess why he awakened, and looked out the window. He said that he saw a bright orange object with 6 or 7 lights to the northeast. The object then shot up into the sky. There was no sound, and the UFO originally looked to be cigar-shaped, but later it seemed to be more disc-shaped or saucer-shaped. That wasn't the end of the event. The next morning, he drove out into the field where the UFO had been. He found a circle of flattened wheat. He said the object had flattened all the wheat in the same direction without breaking any of the stems or the stalks. He also reported his dog reacted to the sighting. He said the dog had become paralyzed. There are pictures of the landing site as well as illustrations made by the witness, and then I'll link to the drawings and the photos at my blog, A Different Perspective. On November 14th in Redmond, Washington, a woman saw a strange, almost disc-shaped object. She didn't hear a sound and was with her husband, who also saw the UFO. And while this might seem to be just another UFO sighting, she did take video of the object. And as usual, I'll have a link on my blog to that video.
Perfect.
Over the Susquehanna River, I was afraid I was going to stumble over that one.
That was pretty good.
I thought it was great. Near Selling Grove, Pennsylvania, on April 28th last year, the witness was taking a walk early in the morning. The witness stopped near the boat launch and looked up, seeing a blue light over the water coming from the Shamokin Dam power plant. The witness took out a cell phone that was set in the camera mode. The image on the phone is moving, but the witness was unable to transfer that to the website. Instead, there's just a simple picture of a blue light, and I'll link to that on my blog as well. And staying in Pennsylvania, a woman near Palindrome said that she was leaving for work early in the morning on August 20th, 2021, when she took a picture of a rainbow with her iPhone. She thought it was an extremely vibrant and wanted a picture of it. She said there was a black streak in the picture under the rainbow. She said that she was, when she enlarged the picture, she couldn't see any structure or form, but did not believe it showed an airplane or, according to her, any type of man-made craft. After a brief analysis, William Puckett said that he agreed with her. He didn't think the streak was made by an aircraft, but does believe it to be a real object. It was not an artifact created by the camera, and I'll link to his website on my blog so you can take a look at that. And finally, in Canada, on August 18th of this year, a woman who was the first to see an object pointed it out to others. It looked to her like a fireball going from west to east. After 10 to 15 seconds, they said the object was circular, was bright orange, and made a circular motion a couple of times. It finally disappeared behind some clouds. But in keeping with the theme here, they did take a video of the object after the first 15 or seconds of viewing, which suggests it wasn't a meteor being in view that long. Unfortunately, I don't have a link to that video, and if I find one, I'll put it up on my blog. And I'll note one other thing. It seems that orange is becoming the predominant color in many of the UFO sightings. Hmm. That's what I have for this week, George.
All right, Kev. We'll talk to you next Friday. Really appreciate everything you do. Kevin Randall, by the way, is a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel who served in Vietnam as a helicopter pilot. And today's incident in Afghanistan really hit him very hard. In a moment, Alan Gordon joins us. We're going to talk about his latest work, The Way Out, a revolutionary scientifically proven approach to healing chronic pain. If you have ever had chronic pain, you know how bad it can be. Up next, Alan will talk about it and how we can get rid of it in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Alan Gordon, our special guest. Let me tell you about Alan, founder of the Pain Psychology Center in Los Angeles, where he oversees a team of 40 therapists. He developed what is called pain reprocessing therapy, which is a cutting-edge protocol for treating chronic pain. And he just completed a groundbreaking neuroimaging study on the efficacy of PRT. That's what that is, in conjunction with the University of Colorado Boulder. His book is called The Way Out, a revolutionary, scientifically proven approach to healing chronic pain. Alan, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, George.
Let's describe what chronic pain is to some of us who really haven't had it. Go ahead.
Sure. So chronic pain is essentially just everyone has experienced acute pain. If you stub your toe, if you sprain your ankle, and generally, you know, there's a sprained ligament or a torn muscle or something, and in a few days or a few weeks, it goes away.
Right.
But chronic pain is pain that persists for a matter of months or years. You've all probably known someone with chronic back pain or headaches or repetitive strain injury, pain that really just kind of haunts you and weighs you down throughout the day.
And they've been escaping chronic pain by taking too many opioids, haven't they?
Absolutely. I mean, there's, you know, we've all heard about this opioid epidemic, and it's been going on for years. But what happens is you treat the pain with opioids, it helps reduce the pain, and you become dependent on the opioids, and eventually you form an addiction. And I've worked with a lot of patients who have developed opioid addictions, and even once we get them out of chronic pain, it can still take a little bit to get off the opioids just because of the addiction factor.
It's just tragic. Now, how did you get involved in chronic pain management?
Well, I actually started off as a chronic pain patient. So I was in my mid-20s and I was going to graduate school at USC, and I developed back pain. And, you know, we've all had back pain when you get in a car accident or when you strain a muscle. Then again, in a few days, it passes. But this stuck. A few weeks went by, and then months went by, and I had this terrible pain that hurt to sit, it hurt to stand. And I went to doctor after doctor. I was told that I had disc herniations. I was told I had disc degeneration. I was told I had kyphosis of the spine. I was giving more diagnoses than you could possibly imagine.
Were these with x-rays? They saw this?
X-rays, MRIs. Yeah, I had a doctor actually show me an MRI with a 5-millimeter disc herniation with partial nerve root compression. I just remember thinking, my God, I'm going to have this pain for the rest of my life.
Now, how did you do that? Were you into sports and stuff like that? Or what happened to you?
You know, that's a great question. The thing is that not a lot of people know this, but 64% of people with no back pain have disc bulges and disc herniations. It's just normal wear and tear.
Yeah.
So often what happens is we have these bulges or herniations. We go to a doctor. They'll point to it and they'll say, this is what's causing your pain. But for many people, these are just normal findings and they're incidental. That's what happened with me. So I eventually determined that, you know, after I did a lot of research, I found that many forms of chronic pain are not actually caused by structural problems in the body, but rather learned neural pathways in the brain. And yeah, I had all of these structural problems in my back, but those were just normal abnormalities. It wasn't what was causing the pain. And eventually I was able to overcome my pain just by literally changing these, the way that these neural circuits were firing in my brain.
Do you ever wake up with a sore back or anything anymore?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, every now and then, if I'm feeling really stressed out or I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself, I may feel something in my back, but it definitely is not, you know, I could go months or years without feeling anything. It's more of you know, my brain's way of letting me know that I'm been in a fight or flight state or putting too much pressure on myself.
Alan, what does neuroscience say about how chronic pain develops for people?
So, you know, pain is a danger signal. If you put your hand on a hot stove, the pain is letting you know that you got to move your hand so you don't cause more damage.
Right. Pretty darn fast, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, but sometimes the brain could actually make a mistake and we can feel pain even when there's nothing wrong with our bodies. And there was this amazing case study from like maybe 5 or 10 years ago where there was a construction worker. He was out at a job site. He was walking along and he stepped on a nail. He looked down and the nail went through his boot and out the other side. He was in agony. You know, his friends rushed him to the hospital. The doctors wheeled him back to the ER. They pried the boot off and the nail had gone right in between his toes. It didn't even cause a scratch. His brain was actually interpreting these safe, neutral signals that were coming from his foot through a lens of danger and generating pain. And more studies are finding that with many forms of chronic pain, this is what's going on. It's actually the brain misinterpreting safe signals from the body as if they're dangerous and generating pain. And the pain is 100% real in these cases. I could tell you, having suffered from many different pain syndromes. But nonetheless, it's in these cases, it's being caused by the brain and not the body.
Now, the opioids that doctors are prescribing left and right, how do the people get addicted to it? Is it just part of the chemistry of the medication?
It's just part of the chemistry of the medication. I was actually very lucky that opioids didn't seem to work for me, because when I was in the depths of the chronic pain that I was feeling, I mean, any chronic pain sufferer out there listening right now knows that very often it's the first thing you think about when you wake up. It's the last thing you think about when you go to bed. You know, constantly thinking if you are going to a party, are they going to have chairs that are comfortable? If you, you know, are going to a amusement park, are the lines going to be too long? Am I going to have to stand? It's like it's always on your mind. So I would have done anything that worked to reduce the pain. But luckily for me, the opioid didn't have much of an impact, or who knows, I may have gotten addicted myself.
Alan, when we come back in a moment, I want to talk about your treatment and how people can get out of pain with it and some of the things you do. We'll spend some time doing that. Then we'll talk a little bit more about study testing of your treatment and some of the things that you've been doing. It's just an amazing thing that you're doing. When we take calls next hour, folks, if you have been suffering with chronic pain, definitely want you as a priority caller, so make sure you're part of the program. But we'll be back in a moment with Alan Gordon. The Way Out is the name of his book. His website, painpsychologycenter.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to take your calls next hour with Alan Gordon. And if you do suffer with chronic pain, definitely become part of the program. I'd like to hear what you've been going through, what caused it. And we'll have Alan give you some tips, too, which is what we're going to talk about more when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Alan Gordon. We are talking about chronic pain and how to be living it pain-free. We'll take your calls next hour with Alan. Alan, tell us, give us an overall of your treatment program and how it works.
Sure, George. So the first thing that we do is we really want to make sure that this isn't a structural problem, because like I mentioned earlier, the brain could actually misinterpret safe signals from the body if they're dangerous and generate pain, right? So your back is fine, the muscles are fine, the ligaments are fine, the tendons are fine, but your brain is actually misinterpreting these signals coming from the nerve fibers, and the pain is actually a false alarm. And we're able to help turn that false alarm off, but we're not able to turn a real alarm off, right? It's like if there's a false alarm, you just ignore the alarm and go about your day.
But like a tumor on the liver or something like that, you got to find out if that's happening.
Exactly. If there's a fracture or if there's, you know, an actual injury to the body, we don't want to treat it like a false alarm. So the first thing we do is we make that determination. Then we really help the patient gather evidence to reinforce that, right? If the symptoms are inconsistent, maybe if there was a lot of stress at the time when the pain first came on, if there's a lot of fear and preoccupation around the sensation, around the pain, these are all indications that this is a brain-generated pain, what we actually call neuroplastic pain, pain that is generated by the brain as opposed to the body. And then what we do is our central technique is something we call somatic tracking. So generally speaking, as I mentioned earlier, pain is a danger signal. So if someone has chronic pain and it's neuroplastic pain, it's being caused by the brain.
Regardless of whether it's physical or mental?
Well, if it's physical, again, we're not going to do this treatment because we don't want to treat someone who has an actual fracture in their back as if it's a false alarm. But
okay.
If it is a false alarm, and you know, when I tell you a little bit about the study that we did, you'll see the prevalence of how common this brain-generated pain actually is. So we do this technique called somatic tracking, and generally speaking, it's the fear and the preoccupation around the pain that perpetuates the symptom, right? If there's a lot of fear and preoccupation around the sensation, it reinforces to the brain that it's dangerous, and it keeps the pain alive. So what somatic tracking does is it's a specific technique aimed at teaching the brain to reinterpret these signals, reinterpret these sensations through a lens of safety, which turns the pain off.
Interesting take. Now, does it take a long time to train your brain to shut it off?
I'll tell you what, you know, it can. There are certain people where it can take a few weeks of doing this over and over. You know, there was a great example is I had a friend who got a rescue dog. And this rescue dog was treated really poorly the first couple of weeks of its life. And so it developed an association, people equals danger. So anytime any one of us would come over to his house and we'd knock on the door, the dog would run and hide behind the couch. But of course, you know, every time we were around the dog, Rocky, the rescue dog, we were really nice to him. We would pet him. We would scratch his belly. And so, you know, after a few weeks, you knock on the door, he's still behind the couch, but he's peeking out a little. A few weeks after that, ring the doorbell, and the dog is maybe halfway between the couch and the door. And a couple weeks after that, we'd come over, and the dog was just clawing at the door. He couldn't wait to get to us, right? So the dog actually developed a new association.
Right.
People equals safe. And so that's what we do is we give people corrective experiences through somatic tracking so that gradually the brain learns to develop a new association. Oh, this sensation is actually safe. And just like Rocky the rescue dog, after enough corrective experiences, the brain officially learns this sensation is safe, and it deactivates the pain.
Can you have chronic pain from physical ailments like fractures and tumors and things like that?
Absolutely, you can. It's definitely possible to have chronic pain that's caused by physical injury.
And what's your way out for that, Alan? Because your program is not for those folks. Are they stuck taking opioids? What happens to them?
Well, there are definitely pain management techniques to help calm the system. And obviously, there are physical treatments like physical therapy and surgery. For example, I ruptured a ligament in my wrist. And that was a real, actual injury. And
ouch.
Ironically, when I was actually writing an article about how to overcome wrist pain. So it was a very ironic injury. But, yeah, in those instances, you definitely want physical treatments. But they did this amazing study at Northwestern a couple of years ago where they took 50 patients who had initial episodes of back pain, and they wanted to see if they could predict what percentage of them were going to go on to develop chronic pain. They didn't take any x-rays, didn't take any MRIs. All they did was took scans of their brains.
Wow.
And they were able to predict with 85% accuracy who was going to go on to develop chronic pain. So more and more they're finding that almost all chronic pain is actually not due to these structural problems in the body. Thank goodness, because if you do have chronic pain that is generated by the brain, it's a lot easier to overcome that. And, you know, so I would estimate that 85 to 90% of all chronic pain is this neuroplastic pain, pain that is caused by the brain and not due to these structural problems in the body.
Because generally those things will go away, won't they?
Exactly. The body is very regenerative. You know, there was actually a football player that I worked with, and he had a 9-millimeter disc herniation, one of the biggest I'd ever seen. He had three different doctors who told him that he needed surgery, and he played football, just smashing into these offensive linemen over and over for
Can you tell
years.
Us the team?
it was actually in college.
Okay.
And so, yeah, he played for 9 years in a high school and college, but he had 30 years of chronic pain. And he was able to completely overcome his back pain in about 3 to 4 weeks. And so, yeah, he had real injuries from, you know, real football collisions. But the body is regenerative. And even if you have injuries, generally they'll heal.
In the brain-created chronic pain, where does it generally send the pain to? Any spot of the body?
Any spot of the body. The brain could actually generate any physical sensation in any part of the body. You know, I told you about my back pain, but I actually had 22 different symptoms. In my 20s, when I was dealing with all of this pain, I had back pain, neck pain, headaches. I had tongue pain. I had toe pain.
Was the pain real, or was it just created in the brain and it wasn't there really?
Yeah. You know, the thing is people talk about imaginary pain all the time. And that is, you know, one of the most common questions that we get is, are you telling me that the pain is in my head? And are you familiar with the Harry Potter books?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
So in the 7th Harry Potter book, toward the end of the book, Harry's having an exchange with Professor Dumbledore. And Harry says, Professor, is all this real or is it just happening inside my head? And Dumbledore says, well, of course it's happening inside your head, Harry. But why on earth should that mean that it isn't real?
That's right. If your brain perceives it, it could be.
100%. You know, they've actually done studies where they've shown that whether you have a structural injury or whether your brain is misinterpreting signals from your body, the pain is processed the same way in both instances. All pain is real. So even if it's generated by the brain, it's literally experienced the same way than if you have a structural injury. So we're never telling anyone the pain is imaginary or the pain isn't real. It's literally these pain circuits in your brain that are misinterpreting danger where there is none.
And they feel it. They feel the pain, don't they?
I mean, yeah. When I was dealing with chronic pain, it was so bad at points that I felt like I was going to pass out from it. It's real.
Will medication make a chronic pain in the brain go away or not?
You know, I've wondered that same thing because opioids didn't work for me, but a lot of the patients that I've worked with, that's actually a great question. I don't know the answer to that. It's hard to know. Is it a placebo or is it really helping? So you know, I think that would be an interesting thing to do a study about.
Yeah, it really would. And, you know, when we open up the phone lines next hour for you, Alan, and I'm requesting most people who call have chronic pain or have had it, I'll let you do a little quick study with them and see, you know, where their pain's coming from and originating.
I would be happy to explore that.
Fascinating. So where does this take you with this kind of study? And then tell us a little bit more about the book, The Way Out.
Absolutely. So, you know, so you're talking about the study that I was telling you about?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was really incredible. You know, we've been doing this work for about 10 years. And
that's,
you know,
a long time.
Yeah, and it was really incredible because the medical community really treats pain as if it's a physical thing. Like you said, they prescribe surgeries, they prescribe opioids. When I went to the best back doctors in Los Angeles, and I was, you know, it was all treated from a physical perspective. And, you know, we've seen this treatment work for the majority of patients. The majority of patients we worked with, they were able to get out of their pain. And it was really frustrating because we wanted to get this treatment out there. You know, this chronic pain is an epidemic. There's 50 million chronic pain sufferers in the United States alone, and probably 40 million of them don't have to be. And 39 million of them don't know that they don't have to be. So, you know, we've been trying to really get this treatment out there, but you're not really able to, you know, change the way the medical community sees something without scientific evidence.
Well, and here's one of the problems. I mean, a patient goes to a doctor for back pain that really he doesn't have but thinks he does. The doctor, in order to keep that patient, may say, well, you've got a slip disc here, or you have this, and will continue to treat that person for as long as he can. And I don't want to say it's to make the money, but it's obvious it's a patient.
Absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, one of the tricky things is that there's the paradigm out there is that chronic pain is caused by a physical problem of the body. So even a lot of well-meaning doctors are going to say, oh, go to physical therapy, you have a disc herniation, because that is the current understanding. And so this is actually a remarkable incident that I experienced that led to the study. But are you familiar with the show The Doctors?
I've not watched it. I've heard about it.
So The Doctors is a daytime show where they, you know, bring in people who have difficult to treat ailments or you know, mystery conditions.
It's like a reality show, right?
Absolutely. And they have, you know, physicians on and people who have stuff that, you know, they haven't been able to heal from. And there was this 16-year-old kid named Casey. And Casey had crippling abdominal pain. And it was so bad, he had to drop off the baseball team and drop out of high school. And he went to Children's Hospital for a full year. And they, of course, did surgeries. They removed his appendix. They did another surgery where they were cauterizing adhesions. After a year, nothing. Then he spent another year at another prestigious hospital, nothing. And so the TV show reached out to us at the Pain Psychology Center and said, do you think you can help? And we said, probably. So, you know, we got his records and we determined, yeah, the pain is real. But once again, it's neuroplastic pain. It's his brain generating this pain because it's misinterpreting signals from his body. So we go on the show with him and, you know, we're talking to the producers of The Doctors and they say, is there anything that you can do to actually, you know, show what happens visually when he overcomes the pain? And we said, let's get an fMRI of his brain before and after treatment. And an fMRI measures brain activity. And so we get an fMRI of his brain and we go on the show. And over a few weeks, he completely eliminates his symptoms. It's the most miraculous recovery I've ever seen. He's back in school. He's back on the baseball team. You know, his parents were over the moon. It was incredible. And we get a second fMRI of his brain after he's out of pain. And it was unbelievable. We actually found ourselves, because of the doctors, because of the TV show, we found ourselves with the first ever fMRI case study of someone who had eliminated chronic pain.
But you can see it in the brain.
Yeah, absolutely. The neuroradiologist called us up after looking at these images, and he said, I've never seen anything like this. We actually show an image of his brain before and after in the book. It's incredible.
Is it an abnormality when they look at it?
You know, you could see pain in the brain. And, you know, when he overcame his pain, his brain looked differently. So we sent this these findings to this world-renowned neuroscientist named Torweger out at UC Boulder. And we said, look at what we got. We got this amazing case study. And he said, this is incredible timing. We're about to start a huge back pain study. It was actually the biggest fMRI study on the treatment of chronic pain that was ever being done. And he said, we would love to invite you guys to be part of the treatment and do your treatment as one of the arms of the study. And of course, nothing is ever easy. And he said to us, there's one catch. We're out of funding and you would need to raise $100,000 in the next 6 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. So of course we needed to get this study. This was our chance to get this treatment out there. So we actually did a crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo.com, if you're familiar with
it. Yeah, and did you pull it off?
Yeah, it was amazing because Indiegogo is, you don't do crowdfunding campaigns for scientific studies. It was, we were competing against, you know, products like bacon-shaped jewelry and cups that smell like juice, you know. And it was amazing. We raised $130,000 in 6 weeks, and we got the study.
Now, how do people react? We're coming up to a break here pretty soon. I'm going to ask you a question, Ellen. We'll get the answer when we come back at the top of the hour with phone calls. But how do people react when you tell them it's in the head? Do they go nuts? You know, do they think, I'm not crazy, but let's think about that, and then we'll take calls with you when we come back.